subtitle is The Use of Suffering to Perfect Our Faith and Bring Glory to God. So let's start off and see if somebody's willing to read paragraph zero for us. Okay.
Idea Wembley. It is a little bit disappointing to expect a detailed report on your work and receive instead such a bad rhapsody as your last letter. You say you are delirious with joy because the European humans have started another of their wars. I see very well what has happened to you. You are not delirious, you are only drunk. Reading between the lines in your very unbalanced account of the patient's sleepless night, I can reconstruct your state of mind fairly accurately. For the first time in your career, you would have tasted that wine which is the reward of all our labor. The anguish and bewilderment of a human soul, and it has gone to your head. I can hardly blame you. I do not expect old heads on young shoulders. Did a patient respond to some of your terror pictures of the future? Did you work and some good self-pitying glances at the happy past. Some find thrills in the pit of their stomach. Were there. You played your violin fiddly, did you? Well, it's all very natural. But do remember, wormwood, that duty comes before pleasure. If any present self-indulgence on your part leads to the ultimate loss of the prey, you will be left eternally thirsting for that drought of which you are now so much enjoying your first year.
What war is he referring to?
World War II.
World War II. This was written in 1941. Okay, and Wormwood seems very excited about the fact that this war has started. What do you think he's envisioning as far as people's reaction to a war that might be useful to Satan and demons? Okay, hate and anger are two natural responses when you go to war. Okay? Yep, definitely some suffering and some fear. All those are things that Wormwood sees as being useful things for here. And Screwtape tries to kind of moderate this this excitement about the war. I'll just, in what terms of previewing here, what do you think is the downside from a demon's point of view of war?
Well, it could also go in another direction than what they really want it to. People could cling to God even stronger than what they did before.
Okay. All right, so he says don't get too excited about it.
You also find in that situation a lot of people that maybe that are not into Christianity at that particular time had a tendency of coming to God, calling out to God.
Sunday night, whenever we were looking at the video on prayer, what was the response to 9/11 according to the preacher that was there in Manhattan? Anybody remember?
A lot of people in the churches.
He said the churches were packed, weren't they? All right, so we may not be able to identify all that much with World War II, maybe a few people in here can, but most of us I don't think can. But we do know what it's like for a country to go to war. Our country has essentially been at war for almost the last 20 years, it seems like. So so we do have some experience with what those thoughts and feelings are for a country at war. Okay, let's continue on and see how Screwtape feels about the potentials and the difficulties of a war. Somebody read paragraph one for us.
If, on the other hand, by steady and cool application here and now, you can finally secure the soul, who will then be yours forever. A grim fool, as you tell us, is fair and tall and astonishment, which you can raise to your lips as often as you please. So do not allow any temporary excitement to distress you from the real business of undermining faith and preventing the formation of virtue. Give me without fail in the next letter a full account of the patient's reaction to the war, so that we can consider whether you are likely to do more good by making him a free patriot or an honest pacifist. There are all sorts of possibilities. In the meantime, I must warn you not to hope too much from the war.
Okay. So what does Screwtape say is the real business of demons? Undermining faith and preventing the formation of virtues. Okay, so look at a few verses here, and if you want to look them up, they're listed in question number two. We could have somebody look up 1 Thessalonians 2:18. Somebody Matthew 13:18-23. Somebody look up 2 Timothy 2:26, Ephesians 6:11, Revelation 12, verse 10. So these are listed in question number two on the back side of the paper. Whoever's got 1 Thessalonians 2:18, we'll go ahead and read that. Nobody looked up that one. Okay. Mm-hmm.
Therefore, we wanted to come to you, even I, Paul, time and again, but Satan hindered us.
Okay. All right. Satan was influencing what was going on, putting stumbling blocks in people's way. So let's read on and get some other perspectives on this. Who's got Matthew 13:18-23?
Here is then the parable of the sword. If anyone hears the word of the kingdom and does not understand it, the evil one comes and snatches it away, what has been sown up in his heart. This is the one on whom the seed was sown beside the road. And the one on whom the seed was sown on the rock of faith, this is the man who hears the word, and immediately receives it with joy. And he has no firm root in himself, but is only temporary. And when affliction or persecution arises, because of his word, immediately he falls away. And the one on whom the seed was sown among the thorns, this is the man who hears the word, and the wary of the word, and the wary of the world, and the deceitfulness of riches choke the word, and it becomes unfaithful, unfruitful. And the one on whom the seed was sown on the good soil, this is the man who hears the word, and understands it. Who indeed bears fruit and brings forth some 100-fold, some 60, and some 30.
Okay, so keep in mind as we read these that through tape says that Satan's real business is undermining faith and preventing the formation of virtues. Okay. And it's described in great detail how he affects different people in different ways. Okay? 2 Timothy 2:26.
And that they will come to their senses and escape from the trap of the devil, who has taken them captive to do his will.
Okay? All right. Satan takes us captive. This implies that Satan actually has power over us. What's your reaction to that?
Power over some.
Okay. He's got power over you if you let him have power over you. And some people allow that. Okay. All right. Ephesians 6:11.
Put on the whole armor of God that you may be able to stand against the wiles of the devil.
And Revelation 12, the first 10 verses.
The great and wondrous sign appeared in heaven. The woman clothed with sun, the moon under her feet, and the sun, 12 stars on her head. She was perfect in twilight and pain, and she was about to be born. Then another sign appeared in heaven, an enormous red dragon with 7 horns, and 10 horns and 7 crowns on his ears. His tail swept a third of the stars over the sky, and flung them to the earth. Dragons to the first woman who was about to give birth, so that he might devour her child among the kingdom. She gave birth to a son, a male child, who will rule all the nations with her own scepter, and her child was snatched up to God to his throne. The woman fled into the desert to a place prepared for her by God, where she might be taken care of for 1,260 days. And there was war in heaven. Michael and his angels fought against the dragon. Dragon was angels for them, but he was not strong enough, and they lost their place in heaven. The great dragon was hurled down, the ancient serpent called the devil, or Satan, who is the whole world astray. He was hurled to the earth, and his angels with him. And then I heard a loud voice in heaven say, Now have come the salvation and the power and the kingdom of our God, and the authority of his Christ. For the accuser of our brothers, who accuses them before our God, day and night, has been hurled down.
Okay. So, keeping in mind that Satan's job is trying to undermine our faith, how can Satan use a war to try to accomplish these goals? What are the opportunities there for faith to be undermined? What's the reaction of families to these young men dying and young ladies dying too? Some people's faith increases during times of tragedy, and for other people, their faith is destroyed during times of tragedy. So obviously, Satan's trying to take the approach of encouraging you to think along the lines of, you know, I hate you, God, for doing this to me, for destroying my family. And so that's the kind of thing that he's going to be whispering in your ear.
I think it can go further than that. People can lose all of believing God, that God exists. For that matter, you know, we go through all of this, there can't be no God.
Right, exactly. You know? Yeah, it can undermine not just how you feel about God, but even whether you believe in God. That is true. Satan's just as happy with that. Okay. He gave Wormwood two choices here on trying to influence his patients. So, what were the two choices and what were the advantage to each of those for Satan? Yeah, this struck me as odd when I first read this. It's like, you know, I can make use of your patient either way, if you make him an extreme patriot or an extreme pacifist. you can still use either of those to your advantage. So give me some descriptions about that. Have you seen that in our current conflict of people who are led away from God, either through patriotism or pacifism?
I think just from when we were in the Middle East, that you see people that say that they're so religious and say God, you know, Allah or whatever, but then they would take a life so easy.
Okay.
And it's like, even if you believe in whatever God you believe in, how can you let God just to take a life so easy?
Okay.
You, you know, they say that they're religious, but they're making the
same thing happened during World War II. You look at the SS group. They were so devoted to their leader, they would do anything in order to gain his praises instead of doing what God would have wanted them to do.
Some people look around at the world today and say those kind of things, but during World War II, you could magnify that 100-fold.
It seems to me like then they're talking about like the David, he got so powerful and so caught upon himself that he was able to do it. That's what was happening, could happen with a patriot. They're so great that we got the best on, we got the power. It's not God, it's me.
It's true. It's true. We can become convinced that it's not so much that we need God's help. You know, we'll take care of the situation on our own. And think about after the 9/11 attacks, you know, people's reaction. Yes, a lot of people started going to church, and a lot of people drew closer to each other and to God. But when it came to thinking about our enemies, say, you know, let's use nuclear weapons and turn the country into a parking lot. And so, you know, Satan can use those kind of feelings to his advantage.
Somewhere I read a long time ago that during World War II, the Lord's Church grew in this country faster than at any time in its history in this country. So it did bring a lot of people who are demons and searching.
Let's look at the other extreme. Suppose somebody that during a time of war becomes, as he describes, an ardent pacifist. How can Satan use that for his advantage?
Oh, convincing them that there is no God.
Okay. All right. Somebody that hates the war so badly that says there couldn't be a God or else he wouldn't allow it. Alluded to earlier in the class. Yes.
A lot of times war brings about this chaos, and people would sometimes use the term God probably do a lot of this to happen. I lost my child, the only child I had, and tragedy that just happened in their lives. But with war, these things do happen. But as Christians, man, I want to talk about us for a second. We should not allow ourselves to fall into the trap that sometimes can happen with despair to the point where we want to blame God for the things that has happened and the disruption in our lives because of the loss of life. We need to continue to hold on to God's hand. We know that we're not going to live forever. Sometimes these things come about, we must be able to handle it. We should be able to handle it better than those who are on the outside of Christ. Mm-hmm. You know. But I found many times, and I say all times, but there are some folks that are not generally Christians who handle things quite well when despair comes. Mm-hmm. But we need to be vigilant and not allow ourselves to fall into that trap that the wormwood.
Some folks, they can't focus on more than one major thing in their life at a time. And so whether you're a pacifist or whether you're a promoter of the war, if you become so focused in either direction, you really haven't got time for God because you're so passionate about stopping the war or promoting the war, that this has become your focus and not God. So that's why Wormwood is here. What he's thinking is this is beneficial.
Mm-hmm. I was watching a documentary last night about the Holocaust, and that was just so evident to me of how something so horrible could be allowed and people would have to be set alive. All the power was in those people's hands that let this happen. But that was just very clear to me in trying to make sense of it all. How could this happen? I don't know if some of it was good, but even though these leaders were kind of good ones, I mean, but there's different eras of history, slavery, Hitler, all of these eras that so much hate and death, just tragedy. And you know there were good people who had an infinite God that just let this happen in this particular happening. They chose to let it be and they knew it was tragic.
But even in those situations, there were a lot of people that rose to the occasion. They took in Jewish people and would hide them and would be, if they would have been found out, they would have served the same sentence as the Jewish people did. There were people that believed so strongly in God that went to worship service even though it was totally forbidden for them to do, and they would burn them. They would lock the doors of the churches and burn these people alive in there. But they persevered until the end. God said, stay with me until the end. He didn't say, not until you have hard times. He said, until the end. And they were people that rose to those occasions.
And you gotta remember, it's man. It's not God. Man.
Exactly.
We're all worse enemies.
That's true. A lot of people say, how can God let this happen? But God gives us free will. Because he wants us to choose to follow him. But the danger of us having free will is that people are going to choose not to follow God. And so it means that by their very nature, they're going to do sinful things.
Fear is a big motivator in people, one way or the other.
And so you get that something like that tragic, that sad to say that you've got to win that battle.
But God has a way of pulling victory out of defeat as well. He can lose a battle and win a war. Exactly. And many times whenever Satan thinks he's won, that's whenever it becomes obvious that in the long run, God won. But he says you can use either of these possibilities. Either somebody who's so focused on the war effort that, as Rick says, they lose sight of what they should be doing, or they become as such a blind rage against the enemies that there's no room for the love and compassion that God wants us to have. Or you can have people at the other extreme that says there is nothing worth fighting for. That it's peace at all costs, no matter what. And God at various times in history did sanction wars. Did command people to go to war because there was an objective to be obtained by that. And so sometimes we have to just trust God that things are going to work out for the best, even though we don't understand. But we maintain our faith that God knows what he's doing. That God has everything happen for a reason. And so we can let things draw us closer to God, especially when we don't understand what's going on and why God would allow things to happen. And sometimes he allows things to happen just to give us the opportunity to do good things, and to set an example, so that, because in the long run, God says what happens in this world is not important. He says these are just situations that you're placed in. What's important is the spiritual kingdom. And people can come to Christ whether they're suffering or whether they're contented in this life. Either way, somebody can become a Christian. And so if they're suffering, use that to win people to Christ. If they're not suffering, use that to win people to Christ. Because the things that happen to you, no matter how bad your life is here, a few decades of difficulty or poverty or an illness are negligible compared to eternity. So if you keep thinking about things in the long term rather than the short term, then you realize how insignificant even terrible suffering is here on earth compared to your soul, the future that's awaiting your soul.
I think in situations like this, you can see both sides of the prospect so much clearer than what you would do in an everyday situation. Because you can see the tremendous faith people have, and you can see the how quickly they can give up as well. So I think it's really tenderous, these strong beliefs or disbeliefs, and they're much more visible than what it would be in an everyday situation.
Faith can take the fear out of war and adversity. Because if you're in a war, you can look at it either way. If I'm killed in the war, I go on to my reward. If I'm not killed, okay, I've got longer to spend on this earth. So it's a win-win. People that don't have faith don't have that same assurance and that same hope and that long-range view.
The only thing I have to think about when you got Christmas suffering, Christmas suffering now, we need to thank God every day for allowing us to see another day. Sometimes it's so easy for us to complain about our condition and complain, Lord, why me? Well, why not you? You can use the situation to make it better for other folks. Use it for an example to make it to promote God and His goodness.
Yeah. In the book of Acts, the apostles rejoiced that they were considered worthy of suffering.
Yeah.
Yeah. Denise had a friend that had some difficulties in her life, and somebody asked her, "Have you ever asked God, why me?" She responded the same way you said, why not me? I've got faith in my life. I'm better equipped to handle a problem than somebody who doesn't have that faith. So better me than somebody else to have this problem.
You know, in our weakness, we can show the strength of God so much more. And I see basically says this in the Bible. And you look at some of the disciples and some of the hardships they went through, but by going through those, they really showed the world the power of God.
can read paragraph 2 for it.
Of course, a war is entertaining. The immediate fear and suffering of the humans is a legitimate and pleasing refreshment for our myriads of toiling workers. But what permanent good does it do us unless we make use of it for bringing souls to our Father below? When I see the temporal suffering of humans, who finally escape us, I feel as if I have been allowed to taste the first course of a rich banquet and then denied the rest. It is worse than not to have tasted it at all. The enemy, true to his barbarous methods of warfare, allows us to see the short misery of his favorites, only to tantalize and torment us, to mock the incessant hunger which, during this present phase of the great conflict, his blockade is admittedly imposing. Let us therefore think rather how to use than how to enjoy this European war. For there are certain tendencies inherent in it which are in themselves by no means in our favor. We may hope for a good deal of cruelty and unchastity.
You continue through paragraph 3 for her sort of continuous remark.
But if we are not careful, we shall see thousands turning in this tribulation to the enemy, while tens of thousands who do not go so far as that will nevertheless have their attention diverted from themselves to values and causes which they believe to be higher than themselves. I know that the enemy disapproves many of these causes, but that is where he is so unfair. He often makes prizes of humans that have given their lives for causes he thinks bad on the monstrously sophistical ground that the humans thought them good and were following the best they knew. Consider, too, what undesirable deaths occur in wartime. Men are killed in places where they knew they might be killed and to which they go. If they are at all of the enemy's party, who cares? How much better for us if all humans died in costly nursing homes amid doctors who lie? Nurses who lie. Wait a minute now. Friends who lie, as we have trained them, promising life to the dying, encouraging the belief that sickness excuses every indulgence. And even if our workers know their job, withholding all suggestion of a priest, lest it should betray to the sick man his true condition. And how disastrous for us is the continual remembrance of death which war enforces. One of our best weapons, contented worldliness, is rendered useless. In wartime, not even a human can believe that he's going to live forever.
Okay. So, as distasteful as you might have found that comment, his comment is valid. When people are in nursing homes, of course the people taking care of them are all telling them how good they look today and how healthy they are and how, you know, they're going to live for another 5 or 10 or 15 years. What's that? You don't think so? Okay. But I've seen it happen, you know. I'm not a nurse, but, you know, still do it myself. You know, when you see somebody who's old, you always try to build them up and make them feel good about how you know, what kind of condition they're in.
Well, you take the little things, the little victories, mm-hmm. You know. I mean,
exactly.
That's not a lie.
Right. And, you know, that in and of itself isn't a bad thing. You're building up the person. But the point he's trying to make here is it takes away the idea of any day could be your last day. And people in nursing homes, if they realize sometimes how bad a shape they were in, might be a little more inclined to prepare for their last day on earth and the day after the last day on earth. And he says the difficulty in a war is that people know this may be their last day on earth. And so he says that if they're at all in any way spiritual, they're going to have more of a tendency to prepare for that eventuality. So they're thinking a lot more about their mortality. than whenever you're not in a wartime. And so that's the comparison he makes to people in a nursing home. If you tell the person, oh, you're in great shape, you're going to live for another 10 years, you know, a lot of people just have this mindset of, I think I'll just do what I want through my life, and then, you know, when I'm almost dead, then I'll become a Christian. And that way I can have the best of both worlds. You know, I can do anything I want in this life, and then at the last minute, I'll convert. And, yes, sir?
Yeah, I imagine what you just said, and the people, there are people that they think that way. But I'm going to tell you, just like the fellow who wanted to tear down his old bonds and build bigger and better bonds, he didn't see the life of required of him just that night.
Mm-hmm.
He didn't live to enjoy those things that he had put in the back of his mind as a plan to do things. You know, we do a lot of planning. But if God is not in the plan, forget about it. You know, even if we see another day, Lord, you know, after what I'll see you tomorrow if the Lord will. We need to just put him on in the Put him in the grave, like that. So that God will know that we are thinking more of him and his grace and mercy that he'll allow us to see us.
In this context, putting him in his place is a good thing.
Yeah.
Putting him in the proper place.
Yeah,
it's true. We do become sort of complacent about our lives and about, you know, well, I'm only this old. Average lifespan is this old, therefore I've got another 10 years, 20 years, 40 years. Depends on your age and how long you plan to live. My grandfather's lived to be, you know, about 90 years old. So I feel like, well, I'll probably live to be about 90 years old. But I may not. It's not guaranteed. Even aside from illnesses, there's accidents and all kinds of things. So none of us are guaranteed another day. And in wartime, that's brought home very clearly because you see people every day that die before their time. And the last phrase that he uses here is that this is one of our best weapons. Contented worldliness is rendered useless. In wartime, not even a human can believe he's going to live forever. So he says that's the difficulty that they as demons face during a wartime. So that's why Screwtape was advising Wormwood, don't get too excited about this war. He used another phrase in there that says, it has certain tendencies inherent in it, which are in themselves by no means in our favor. So he says, you may enjoy how people react to the war, but don't feel like this is going to be a wonderful thing for the cause of faith. Somebody can read paragraph 4, we'll finish up.
I know that Gatsby and others have seen in war a great opportunity for attacks on faith, but I think that view was exaggerated. The enemy's human partisans have all been plainly told by him that suffering is an essential part of what he calls redemption. So that a faith which is destroyed by a war or pestilence cannot really have been worth the trouble of destroying. I am speaking now of diffuse suffering over a long period, such as the war will produce. Of course, at the precise moment of terror, their bereavement or physical pain, you may catch a man when his reason is temporarily suspended. But even then, if he applies to enemy headquarters, I have found that the post is nearly always defended.
Okay. He uses a phrase here. He says, the enemy's human partisans have all been plainly told by him that suffering is an essential part of what he calls redemption. Okay. Is that a biblical concept, do you think? Is suffering part of redemption? Okay. In that sense, yes, it is. Some people I guess look at suffering as kind of like, well, if I suffered all this, then God owes me salvation. And that's not always a true supposition. It depends on how you handle the suffering. That's what he's looking for. We're all going to suffer. We're told that already. It shouldn't come as any surprise. But the suffering in and of itself isn't what saves us. It's how, what is our reaction to that suffering?
How we
handle it. That's what's important. And God says, you know, don't worry about suffering. Take it whenever it happens. It's going to come. But what happens during that suffering is what determines the level of your faith. Use it as a faith building experience rather than a faith destroying experience. And he says a faith destroyed by a war or pestilence cannot really have been worth the trouble of destroying. Agree or disagree with that statement? I think that's what he's getting to here, is if a tragedy or a difficulty destroys your faith, what Screwtape is saying is that that person's faith really wasn't that strong to begin with. Pardon? Rocky soil. Okay.
He was a nerd.
All right, we'll bring out the boxing gloves after class. Let y'all work that one out. But yes, be careful who you insult. Okay, she may be the one with pain injection later that decides whether or not to give you. But yeah, a lot of times Screwtape says we were going to end up with this person anyway. It may have been the tragedy that pulled them away, or it may have been something else later on, but if their faith was weak, then we were going to end up with Solon. Not that important to worry about.
It just shows that he's more after those that are more tuned into God. Those are the ones he really wants to break
down. The others he's going to end up with anyway. So if you're going through a lot of suffering, one way to look at it is Satan must be really trying to work on me. So that must mean that my soul right now is safe. So you could take a little bit of comfort in your suffering that Satan, if he's working this hard on me, then he must see me as a difficult target. So you could take some consolation in that thought.
Well, you know, we sort of use that terminology too here. You know, a lot of times you say, well, the Lord, I mean, Satan is not worried about those people that's out there in the street doing everything that they want to do. He's not worried about them. They
already has those.
So now he wants to work on the ones that are in the churches, you know, the ones that have faith. So that kind of leads to this statement also.
That's exactly right. Okay. Our time is up. I'll bless it. Would you close this in prayer?
Thank you.